We're in 1 Samuel chapter 22. 1 Samuel 22. And I'll have you put your hand there, and we'll also be in Psalms. I want to read some of the Psalms. They're shorter Psalms, but the title indicates that they were probably written somewhere around this time. And so I think it's interesting to connect the two. It helps us get a picture of what's going on inside the heart and the mind of David. And so while your hand is there, go over to Psalm 57. Just background information. David has confirmed with Jonathan that Saul is indeed trying to kill him. And it seems obvious to us as we read it. Yeah, he's trying to kill him. He's been trying to kill him. We counted at least six times. But it seems like people are just now waking up to that fact. But even Jonathan still thought, no, he's not trying to do it. I've already talked with him. He said he would not kill you. But David said, he is trying to kill me. So they made up the plan. You remember that. They had the feast in the new moon. David didn't show up. And if Saul was upset about it, they knew he was trying to kill him. But if he said, it's all right, then everything was fine. So I think it was the second day that Saul asked about David. And Jonathan said, he told him the story they'd made up. Saul was angry. Saul threw a javelin at Jonathan, trying to kill his own son. He was upset. He was still trying to kill David. And so Jonathan knew it, and it was confirmed to David. And they actually made a covenant together. Jonathan was going to show kindness to David. David would show kindness to Jonathan and to his seed after him. I believe they both knew that David was going to be the next king. But because Saul is trying to kill David, David runs. He goes into hiding. He's a refugee now. And as he's running away, he stops by the priests in Nob. I guess that was, it must have been where the temple had been, not the temple, the tabernacle had been pitched. It was in Shiloh, but Shiloh was destroyed. It doesn't explicitly say that in 1 Samuel, but archaeology is very clear. It has been destroyed, and the tabernacle was not there anymore. Shiloh's not really significant at this time. So it was probably destroyed at the Battle of Aphek when Eli fell backwards and they took the ark. But here he goes to Nob, and there is the tabernacle, and there are the priests of the Lord. And as he goes there, he talks to Ahimelech, and he lies to him. He says, King Saul has sent me on this special mission. It's secret. I can't tell anybody what it's about. And because his command was hasty, I didn't bring anything with me. So, do you have any food? And do you have any weapons? So he gave him some food, 5 loaves. There was also some men with him. We don't know for sure. If I were to pick a number, I would say there were probably 4 other men with him because he had 5 loaves. And you see that where a loaf for a person in other places. They had the sword of Goliath. And he said, hey, there's nothing like that sword. No other sword like Goliath's sword. Get that for me. And so he takes that. From there, David, in great fear, he goes to Gath. You remember, Philistine city. He goes to a Philistine city, the enemies of Israel, first of all. But also, Gath is where Goliath is from. And he's carrying Goliath's sword. And David was a prominent figure. And they recognized him, of course. They knew that he was a prominent man in Israel's army. And he was prominent among the people. It's interesting to think that David had a much smaller view of himself than everybody else did. I mean, he didn't consider himself as prominent as the Philistines said. Wow, isn't this the king of Israel? Now, they knew he wasn't, but his popularity had grown. Isn't this who they sang? Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. Popularity had gotten around. The people liked David. The Philistines knew about David. Apparently, David didn't think of himself as highly as other people did. It reveals something about him. But David became even more afraid. He was afraid to begin with, but it was even worse now. He's in the Philistines' territory, their own city, and they know who he is, and they know that he's the man who's killed Goliath. And so David pretends to be mad or pretends to be crazy. And so they kick him out of Gath. So the Lord protected David, even though David wasn't walking in God's design. He wasn't doing right. He shouldn't have done that. He was running for his life because of fear. It wasn't walking according to God's design in faith, but he was running in fear. But it seems after he came to the cave Adullam, because that's where he went afterwards, that he got his heart and his mind in order, as both Psalm 59 and Psalm 142 indicate. I don't know for sure that those psalms were written at this time, but perhaps they were. And you're in Psalm 57. Verse 1 of this, there's the title there. It says, to the chief musician, Altasheth Mitchum of David, when he fled from Saul in the cave. So probably, I don't believe there's another instance except when he was, except later where he was in other caves. But I think the cave probably is referencing here the cave Adullam. But it says this. He says, be merciful unto me, O God. Be merciful unto me, for my soul trusteth in thee. Yea, in the shadow of thy wing will I make my refuge until these calamities be overpassed. I will cry unto the God, or unto God most high, unto God that performeth all things for me. He shall send from heaven and save me from the reproach of him that would swallow me up. Selah. God shall send forth his mercy and his truth. I believe that word mercy there is chesed. His chesed and his truth, that which is firm. My soul is among lions, and I lie even among them that are set on fire, even the sons of men, whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp sword. Be thou exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let thy glory be above all the earth. They have prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. They have digged a pit for me, into the midst whereof they are fallen themselves. Selah. My heart is fixed, O God, my heart is fixed. I will sing and give praise. Awake up, my glory. Awake, psaltery and harp. I myself will awake early. I will praise thee, O Lord, among the people. I will sing unto thee among the nations, for thy mercy is great unto the heavens, and thy truth unto the clouds. Be thou exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let thy glory be above all the earth. So you think about David's going through some rough times, and it's not because he's been doing wrong. He didn't do anything wrong to Saul to deserve him chasing him and taking him out of the land. And yet, you see the heart of David looking to the Lord until these calamities be overpassed. And he continually does this. He continually does this. If you're back in, and don't lose your place in Psalms, because we'll be back there in just a few minutes. But if you look at chapter 22, we read this last week, the first five verses. David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave Adullam. He departed from Gath, went to Adullam. It was a cave. It was the cave at Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented, gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them, and there were with him about 400 men. It's interesting. He's hiding, but it seems like everyone that tries to find him knows where he's at. All these people come to him. We'll find Abathar. He flees, and he runs to David. How did he know? They found him. Interesting. It says in verse 3, and David went thence to Mizpah of Moab, and he said unto the king of Moab, let my father and my mother, I pray thee, come forth and be with you till I know what God will do for me. And he brought them before the king of Moab, and they dwelt with him all the while that David was in the hold. And the prophet Gad said unto David, abide not in the hold, depart and get thee into the land of Judah. Then David departed and came into the forest of Hereth. So David departed. He went into Judah, the forest. And it's important here to note in verse 5, the prophet Gad came to David. So he listened to the man of God. He took counsel from the man who knew God, the message of the Lord. By the way, the Lord delights in using people. He does. He does. And so we should expect God to use people in our lives, and we should expect God to want to use us in other people's lives. If we're yielded to Him, if we're walking in His design, He'll do that. That's what He's designed for us. There is another psalm which may have been written at this time or around this time. If you go to Psalm 63, when he's in the wilderness of Judah, it says here. If it wasn't written here, it was probably written a little after. But he says this, Psalm 63, a psalm of David when he was in the wilderness of Judah. O God, thou art my God, early will I seek thee. My soul thirsteth for thee, my flesh longeth for thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is. He can relate being in the wilderness of Judah. Maybe it was even in Gedi, maybe later. Being in a weary place, maybe they were thirsty. But yet he was saying, I know what it's like to be thirsty physically, but I thirst after you like that as well. His mind was much deeper than just this physical life. And he says, verse 2, to see thy power and thy glory, so as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. Because thy loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise thee. Thus will I bless thee while I live. I will lift up my hands in thy name. My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth shall praise thee with joyful lips when I remember thee upon my bed and meditate on thee in the night watches. Because thou hast been my help, therefore in the shadow of thy wings will I rejoice. My soul followeth hard after thee, thy right hand upholdeth me. But those that seek my soul to destroy it shall go into the lower parts of the earth. They shall fall by the sword, they shall be a portion for foxes. But the king shall rejoice in God. Everyone that sweareth by him shall glory, but the mouth of them that speak lies shall be stopped. I mean, you think about the mind of David. What is his thought process? What is his desire right now? It's not, his primary desire is not get out of these problems. Is it? Lord, just get me out of these problems. Lord, you got to help me get out of here. Get out of this. And Lord, help me, 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 me. It's actually focused on the Lord. Ah, he wants to know, Lord, I want to know you. I lift up my hands to your name. To see thy power and thy glory as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. Your loving kindness, which I believe there is that chesed, it's better to me than life itself. My lips shall praise thee. See, his focus is not on, Lord, how can you help me out? It's on the Lord and on knowing him, worshiping him, thinking on him. And he's in the wilderness of Judah, probably when he wrote this, running from Saul. See, we get so selfish, don't we? It's easy to praise the Lord when everything's going all right. But when things start going wrong, Lord, now you got to help me out. Lord, it's got to be about me. But that wasn't the case for David. So the prophet Gad told him, you need to get into the land of Judah. Okay, so perhaps at that time he was in Moab. He did go to Moab. Did he stay there? Maybe he was there. But the prophet Gad says, go to Judah. Which, you think about it, you go to Judah, well, that's Saul's around there. If I go there, I'm more likely to be in danger. And sometimes obeying God is counterintuitive. It's always going to be counterintuitive, or it's always going to be against the thinking of the natural man. Always is. 1 Corinthians 2:14 says, but the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. But David obeyed, and he did. If you look at verse 6, David discovered himself. When Saul heard that David was discovered, the men that were with him, and the men that were with him, now Saul abode in Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, having his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. It's kind of interesting, this posture that he had. Saul heard that David was discovered, and his men. And where was Saul? He was in Gibeah, under a pomegranate tree. He had his spear in his hand and all his men about him. Now, that's kind of a strange kind of posture for a king. I mean, if you're in danger or something like that, you might get your men around you, right? You might get your spear in your hand. We saw this posture before. When was that? The Battle of Michmash. And even before that, a little bit. You know, when all of that, everybody was running away. He had about 600 men left. Where is he doing? He's sitting under a pomegranate tree. He's got his men around him. Well, there's danger, so he's being protected. It's the same posture that we found at the Battle of Michmash and prior. Perhaps it's a defensive, his defensive posture. But if you think about it then, well, what is he defending himself from? What is he defending himself from? It's going to be clear that Saul is spinning a narrative. He's spinning a narrative here. And the narrative is that David is out to get him. That's the narrative. David's going to get me. You got to protect me. He's running away. There's a conspiracy. That's the narrative that he's going to promote. And that's what he says in verse 7. Then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, "Hear now, ye Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds? That all of you have conspired against me, and there is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse, and there is none of you that is sorry for me, or showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day." Wow. Can you believe it? Can you believe what he's saying? Is anyone loyal to me? Why is he asking that? Maybe because he couldn't hide the fact that he's trying to get David now. I mean, you can't really hide that fact. David's ran. The story's gotten around. Maybe he's spinning his narrative here. I believe he is. David's out to get me. And he asks, you know, has David bribed all of you? As if he would give them, make them captains of thousands. As if David is trying to set himself up as king somehow. As if David is going to bribe all these people to serve him, to be his generals, so that he can take over the kingdom. And he's asking his men, has David bribed all of you so that you're not going to be loyal to me anymore? He says, you've conspired against me. He says, there's none that showeth me that my son has made a league with the son of Jesse. No one told me that Jonathan is friends with David and they've made this pact. See, nobody told me this. You're all against me. There's none of you that is sorry for me or showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day. So Jonathan, he stirred up David and he caused David to be, to want to kill Saul. See, this is his narrative that he's spinning. And he's saying to his men, boy, nobody's sorry. Nobody's loyal to me. Nobody. He's the victim. He's the one throwing the javelin at David. He's the one trying to kill him in his bed. He's the one that's without cause. David had done nothing to Saul. And yet, Saul's the victim. Poor Saul. Everybody's trying to get him. Everybody's against him. This is not uncommon. Right? It's not uncommon. Especially in our day. Saul's living in an alternate reality. He's living in a fake place that he made up himself. He made it. It's not real. He's pretending that it's true. And if you don't like reality, though, making up a false one is not going to help you out. It really won't. It'll only take you farther from God. Because God lives in reality. You have to approach everything from the perspective of God's design for your life. What is God's design? What is true? What is right? What is just? And you have to accept it. Saul didn't want that. He did not obey the Lord. He said no. He rejected the Lord. And so because of that, truth wouldn't benefit him, at least benefit his own design for his life. So he had to make up his own little lie. Pride is going to cause you to feel victimized. Everything that hurts your pride is the enemy. Oh, everybody's against me. Why are there problems in your life? Well, you say, it's this, or you say, it's that. It's not me, never me. And if that's the case, you've got a problem, bad problem, pride problem. When the problem's everybody else. Well, see, he caused this. deal with that with our children. But it's just, isn't it just in us, you know? Why didn't you do right? Well, they did this. Well, she was doing this to me. It's always somebody else's fault. Nobody takes responsibility for themselves. You must take responsibility for yourself. If you're going to cause firmness to God, if you're going to conform to God and His design, you have to take responsibility for yourself. Get right with the Lord. Saul could have done that, but he chose, no, I'm rejecting God. I'm going to go in my own way. And in order to do that, he had to make up this narrative. Because he wanted people to be on his side. And so he's saying, oh, all these people are against me. Are you guys against me too, all my men? And what Saul said wasn't even true. Jonathan didn't stir up David against Saul. David's not lying in wait. Give me a break. This is the opposite. He's running for his life. Does any of this sound familiar? Happens in the world today. They flip the narrative completely on its head. It's been happening for a long time around the world. It's happening more and more here in America. When you start trying to be deceptive or push a narrative, take heed, because you're working your own design. You're not working God's design. So this is David talking to his men. Verse 9, then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub. And he inquired of the Lord for him and gave him victuals and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. You remember Doeg in chapter 21. He was there. He saw David. He was detained before the Lord, the text says. We don't know exactly why he was there. We do know he's a wicked man, Doeg is. And he was there, he saw David, and so nobody else spoke up. No one else is recorded as saying anything of the men there. We don't know if they would have spoken up, but we know Doeg offered information. But you think, didn't Doeg understand? Didn't he perceive the situation? Didn't he know that this isn't true, it's not equal? Did he not know what was going on? Maybe he didn't. But he's not particularly a godly man, as we'll see. He was set over the servants of Saul, so he was probably prominent in the kingdom a little bit to be head of the servants. That's not bad. But you know, when divisions start happening, that's the time that people may try to move up in the chain by showing their loyalty. Like, okay, you know, now there's a great divide here, and they... So I'm going to jump to this guy's side and say, oh, I support him and I'm going to help him. And that's kind of what happens here with Doeg, it seems like. You know, there's kind of starting a schism, and then Saul is going to favor Doeg. And so maybe Doeg can get a higher position because he's kind of buddying up to Saul. And, oh, yeah, Saul, I'll help you. I'm loyal and I'm going to do what I can do to help you. Seems like that's what's happening. Trying to please Saul for his own benefit. It's in keeping with the kind of character that we see Doeg has. And he says, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub. He says he inquired of the Lord for him. He gave him victuals, provisions. He gave him the sword of Goliath. Now, some of that's true. It's not all true, is it? Perhaps Doeg assumes here, and he doesn't mean anything by it. Or perhaps he too is trying to stretch the story to push a narrative. Ahimelech did not inquire of the Lord for him. Whenever I go through this, and I think, we got to be careful. It's so easy, isn't it, to assume things? It's easy to assume. There's only a very fine line between believing something is likely and believing something is true. Sometimes we say, that's likely happened, and then all of a sudden it turns into, it happened. When we don't know, we just assume. Have to be careful. Can't assume without hearing the whole matter. And the king calls for the priests. Verse 11. Then the king sent to call Ahimelech, the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house. So they came. All his father's house, the priests that were at Nob, and they came, all of them, to the king. The king's in Gibeah. So they came from Nob to Gibeah. And in verse 12, and Saul said, "Hear now, thou son of Ahitub." And he answered, "Here I am, my lord." And Saul said unto him, "Why have ye conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse, and that thou hast given him bread and a sword, and hast inquired of God for him, that he should rise against me to lie in wait as at this day?" Wow. You know, you talk to the king, and the king says, you know, why did you do all of this? You don't even give him a chance. You just assume that he did do all of these things. He says he called his father's house. That's probably the house of Ithamar. We've talked about that. These are sons, children, grandchildren of Eli. God had already prophesied that Eli's family was cursed. They're going to die. He's going to cut off the arm of his family from being priests. And this is part of that prophecy being fulfilled, what's about to happen. But he questions him. He says, "Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse?" You think, doesn't his question have a built-in assumption? It's the famous, you know, "Have you stopped beating your wife?" How do you answer that? If you say yes, that means you did. If you say no, that means you still are. It's a built-in assumption, right? And here, this has got a built-in assumption. "Why have you conspired against me?" You're assuming that I did. He didn't even give him a chance. Saul's prejudged the case. He's already decided this is the way it's going to be. Proverbs 18:13 says, "He that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is folly and shame unto him." And this is antithetical to God's design for deciding a case. You ought to hear the whole thing, not just hearsay. At this point, all he has to go off of is hearsay. And so, okay, maybe he should go and talk to him. You go and talk to him, and you find out what he says. But he didn't go to talk to him to find out what he says. He goes to talk with him to ask him, "Why did you do it? Why did you do it?" And for Saul, the truth is not important right now, okay? The truth is not really important. What's important is the narrative. The narrative is what is important. We've got to keep this narrative going. And unfortunately for these priests, they're on the wrong side of the narrative that Saul's pushing. See, Saul has to have people against him to make this seem like a true conspiracy. I've got to have people against me. And so David's talking with these men, and this is great. They're, in a sense, they're the scapegoat. Whether it's true or not does not matter. This supports his narrative. See, there's a conspiracy. David's against me. Jonathan's against me. And now these priests are against me. See, there's a conspiracy. He has a right to feel like he does. He's justifying himself. By the way, this is not unlike what has happened in communist countries, right? There's a narrative, and it doesn't matter really what's true. Does it support the narrative? Does it support what we're saying? And if you happen to be on the wrong side of that, sorry. That's happened for many, many years in communist countries, and it's what's happening globally now. Yes, even in America, we've all experienced that, where you can't go against the narrative. It doesn't matter really what's true. It matters what we're pushing here. And he tells him, "You've given him bread, a sword. You've inquired of God for him, that he should rise against me to lie in wait as at this day. Why have you done all of this?" He didn't do all of that. But Abimelech answers. And he answers with truth. But, see, that's not going to be good for him, because truth is not what's important. It's the narrative. If he would have answered something like Michael would have answered, "He forced me. He tried to, you know, he was going to kill me." That would support the narrative. You'd be okay. But no, he just tells him the truth. And notice what he says here in, it's in verse 14. "Then Ahimelech answered the king and said, 'And who is so faithful among all thy servants as David? which is the king's son-in-law, and goeth at thy bidding, and is honorable in thine house. He just says, what's David done? He's been faithful. He's honorable. He's your son-in-law. Who is as faithful as David? He's just telling him the truth. What's David done wrong? And then that's not going to go well for him because you're not supporting the narrative now. In verse 15, did I then begin to inquire of God for him? Be it far from me. Let not the king impute anything unto his servant, nor to all the house of my father. For thy servant knew nothing of all this, less or more. He didn't know anything. He's just telling him the truth, the exact truth. And wow. Notice what verse 16. And the king said, thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou and all thy father's house. Wow. Wow. So Ahimelech says, I don't know anything about this, less or more. I've told you all I know. And these priests are speaking the truth, but the truth doesn't agree with Saul's narrative. So now he must condemn them. He has to condemn them because it disagrees with his narrative. And so Saul judges. He makes a decision. You're going to die. And your father's house. Wow. Saul has completely rejected God. There was nothing more important to him than himself. He would take anyone and everyone who was in his way, even his own family. And now the priests, anyone who disagreed with the narrative, anyone that didn't side with him, they're a problem because he had made up this story that he's beginning to believe. I believe he does believe this story that he's making up. And these lies. And so he tells the footman, verse 17, and the king said unto the footman that stood about him, turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests of the Lord. So he told them, gave them a command. They wouldn't do it. These men feared God more than Saul. It was not righteous. It was not righteous for them to slay the priests. So they wouldn't do it. I guess kudos to them. That was good. But then you've got that man over there that's, hey, he wants to get a leg up. A guy who's looking for something special, something he can help others. He can help himself, excuse me, by using others. He can maybe get the next level, rise to a new step of the ladder. And what does he say in verse 18? And the king said to Doeg, turn thou and fall upon the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priests and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. So Doeg, he complied. He would do it. It says he kills 85 persons that wore the ephod. And then verse 19, and Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and sucklings, oxen and asses, sheep with the edge of the sword. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abithar, escaped and fled after David. Wow, so Doeg, he complies. Of course, he's going to get in good with the king. And so he does that. He kills the priests. He goes to Nob, and he kills. Nob was the village where they lived, and he killed all their families, all their possessions. He did a better job in his wickedness than Saul did in killing the Amalekites at the commandment of the Lord. You think about it. Could Saul have obeyed? Would it have been that difficult to obey the Lord? See, it wasn't a matter of, well, it was just too hard for Saul. He was wicked. He chose to reject the Lord. Doeg here, he utterly kills everyone except for Abithar does escape. So Abithar escapes. Look at verse 20. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abithar, escaped and fled after David. And Abithar showed David that Saul had slain the Lord's priest. Again, I think it's interesting. All these people that want to find David, they just go and find him. Saul can't find him. And probably that has to do with the Lord protecting him. So David showed what Saul had done. By the way, it says that Saul had slain the Lord's priests. Did Saul really slay the Lord's priests? He did. He did. It was him. He did it. Even though Doeg did the dirty work, it was Saul. Saul's just as guilty. And you think, well, I didn't do it, but he's culpable. And before the Lord, he's culpable. Verse 22, and David said unto Abiathar, I knew it that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of thy father's house. Abide thou with me, fear not, for he that seeketh my life seeketh thy life, but with me thou shalt be in safeguard. So Abiathar showed him. David knew that Doeg would tell Saul. Lying has consequences. He was lying. He lied to Ahimelech. David did. And it has consequences. You know, would Saul have killed him anyhow? Maybe. But lying always has consequences. It wasn't right what Saul did, but also it was in fulfillment as well of what God said would happen to Eli. Abiathar is instructed to stay with David. They have the same adversary, and Abiathar would be safe with him, is what he mentions. Just as way of, we'll finish with Psalm 52. Can you go over there? This one is a little more specific in the title than the ones we've read thus far. If the title is indeed correct, then it would have been written about this time. Psalm 52. Look at verse 1. To the chief musician, Maschil, a psalm of David, when Doeg the Edomite came and told Saul and said unto him, David is come to the house of Ahimelech. Why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man? The goodness of God endureth continually. Thy tongue deviseth mischiefs like a sharp razor, working deceitfully. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than to speak righteousness, Selah. Thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place, and root thee out of the land of the living, Selah. The righteous also shall see it and fear, and shall laugh at him. Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches, and strengthened himself in his wickedness. But I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. I will praise thee forever, because thou hast done it. And I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints. Speaking of Doeg there. So, we finish chapter 22. And there's a lot we can learn just from this chapter. By the way, the narrative. When the false narrative is being pushed, what did David do? What did David do? Did David get his army together and fight? Hey, we need to rise up. The South will rise again, right? No, that's not what he did. He had opportunities to kill Saul. Didn't take him. Why? He says, my hand should not be upon the Lord's anointed. And so he waited on the Lord. He waited on the Lord. The Lord took care of it. We've got to be careful that we don't get in that movement where we've got to take things in our own hands and we're going to fix everything. You've got to put it in the Lord's hands. You have to walk as the Lord prescribed, to be wise as serpents, harmless as doves. And we have to be careful. Don't get caught up in that rhetoric. Even though this happens, doesn't it? The narrative's pushed. They don't care about truth. And it upsets you. It should upset you. But you have to wait on the Lord. Be committed to the truth. Lord, I thank you for this story, how you're working in David's life. And we see it in the Psalms. His heart is towards you. His mind is towards you, even though he's running for his life. Pray you'd help us to have that same mind, same heart, to be men and women, the heart after you. Even in the tough times and the good times, help us to truly exalt you above ourselves, not to be selfish about a relationship with you, but to love you because of who you are. Please bless us, Lord, tonight, and as we begin this week, help us to walk with you. Help us to think on you, not to forget the things that we've heard. We pray this in Christ's name. Amen.